Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime podcast on the internet. First on the docket, let's talk about the DeBell and Ballo jury trial dates. Will it actually go? Second, Kyle Rittenhouse released on a bond, a $2 million bond. Third, more depositions released in the Maxwell matter. Fourth, Harvey Weinstein, the man who usually was behind the camera, is now in front of it, and not by choice. Fifth, the obituary of Suzanne Morphew's father says it all about whether she will be found. Sixth, a woman loses her battle to keep the remains of her husband. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for joining us. Now, I want to apologize to everyone about not being able to put up any videos last week. For lack of a better term, wow, I was under the weather, to say the least. That's right. I got struck by the COVID-19, and it was brutal. Needless to say, I had no energy to get up, let alone to get up and do a podcast, but we are back. We are healthy. We are good to go now. So thank you for everyone that sent comments wondering where I was. I just couldn't even get up, but now we're feeling a lot better. So first on the docket, let's talk about the DeBell and Ballo jury trial. As you all know, or hopefully you know by now, the judge decided to join the Lori Ballo and Chad DeBell matter as it relates to the charges regarding the discovery or the delay and hindrance related to the discovery of JJ and Tylee's remains found on Chad DeBell's property. The court ultimately granted the motion by the prosecution to join the matters, and as you may recall, Lori Vallow's attorney did not object to the joinder. Chad DeBell's attorney, Mr. Pryor, did object to the joinder, and he still has the right to renew a motion for severance based upon any new evidence that's going to come out and be presented at trial and based upon further arguments which will be set down the road. So when the judge did grant the motion for joinder, he did not set a trial date because they had to clear dates. But now we know that there'll be a pretrial conference on June 2nd of 2021, and the jury trial is scheduled to commence on July 12th, 2021 through August 6th, 2021. It'll be interesting to see if the trial actually goes for lots of reasons, one being the COVID world, whether it'll be safe enough at that time to actually conduct a jury trial. Second, whether there'll be a plea agreement during that time as well. You never know what will happen, but a jury trial starting in July, that is an eternity in the criminal defense world. A lot can happen, to say the least. There's also going to be issues of change of venue that still need to be resolved and will be heard in a couple of weeks, and then we'll know where the trial may be. Most of the time, the court will reserve those motions until they try to select a jury, and if and only then does the judge determine that there's no way to obtain a jury panel that doesn't know about the case, and that's not really the standard. Doesn't matter if they know about the case. The question is, have they formed an opinion about the case? And you'd be surprised, even in high-profile cases, there are lots of people out there that don't pay any attention to what goes on in the news and in the world. So when jurors get their juror summons, they don't know necessarily what they're being called in for. In this particular case, a whole county will probably be quite aware of when the trial date is and what the matter will be about. So then the only question is will these people be able to give a fair trial to both sides, reserving judgment until they hear all the evidence in the case? We'll have to wait and see. I think the trial's more than likely gonna get moved to a different location. All the parties remain the same. The only thing that changes is, in fact, the location of the trial. Next on the docket, Kyle Rittenhouse. Remember that guy? That's right, he was a 17-year-old gunman accused of killing protesters in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Remember, he was fighting extradition from Illinois back to Wisconsin. Well, he ultimately got there. And I told you at the time, the attorney somehow arguing that there was no probable cause to extradite Mr. Rittenhouse back to Wisconsin made no sense. The judge rejected it. And I'd suggested at the time they need to do is simply get him back there to Wisconsin. A bond will be set. The court obviously set a bond, thinking that he more than likely would not be able to make it. But apparently Mr. Rittenhouse has a lot of fans, and he has lots of fans with money because the bond was set at $2 million. That is a ton of money. Think about it. If you got arrested today and your bond was $2 million, would you have friends that would put up $2 million in cash or $2 million in property to secure that bond if you fail to appear? Most people probably wouldn't be able to make that. That's probably what the judge thought when he set the bond at $2 million. In this particular case, we've talked about it, is that Mr. Rittenhouse has some very powerful attorneys that have got on his case, specifically Mr. Lynn Wood. This is the gentleman who has made a lot of money prosecuting defamation cases. And I anticipate that Mr. Wood, if Mr. Rittenhouse is found not guilty, will be filing lots of defamation suits on behalf of his client, Mr. Rittenhouse. According to the sheriff's department, Mr. Rittenhouse was turned over to his own security detail arranged by his attorneys and is no longer in custody, when apparently the press called to confirm whether he had in fact been released. Once again, do you have a security detail? Well, the other thing that is apparently upsetting lots of people in this particular matter is apparently the CEO of MyPillow, Mr. Mike Lindell, helped play a role in this, as well as actor Ricky Schroeder. Has anyone heard from Ricky Schroeder in like the last 10 years or something? Maybe 20, I don't know. But apparently he has also helped with the bond as well. Some people are absolutely apoplectic that Rittenhouse made a bond. Now, most of these people that are completely outraged that Mr. Rittenhouse made a bond are also the same people that think there should be no bond for anyone, and also a lot of the same people that think that no one should ever go to prison, which shows complete intellectual dishonesty, because you only don't want people that you support to not have to pay a bond or go to prison, but your enemies or the people you don't agree with, they're the only ones that should go to prison. That, my friends, is what drives me absolutely nuts in the world when it comes to the law. There is the law. There is the rule of law. It should apply equally to everyone. And what people forget is that the law should be void of politics. It should be void of passion and emotion, and it should be based upon logic and thinking. And these people, some people, just don't understand. The bond was set to make sure that he appears at court and to protect the community. The judge set it reasonably high enough to make sure he probably wouldn't have made it, but he did. So get over it. Bottom line, this case is not a slam dunk for the prosecution, nor is there any guarantee that Mr. Rittenhouse is going to walk on this particular case. But you're going to have to remember, Mr. Rittenhouse is going to have a jury made up of people that were not out there rioting and trying to burn down the city. The victims of this particular case were the people out there rioting and burning down the city. This case could go either way. We already put up a video about this, and you can see Rittenhouse, I think, has got a pretty good self-defense claim as things go. We'll continue to follow this case. And I know that a lot of people will call me names because of my thoughts on this Rittenhouse case. But when you look at the evidence and the video and the timing of it, I think he's got a pretty good self-defense case. No guarantees whenever you go to trial. Maybe it'll be a plea bargain that will avoid a big circus trial for everyone. However, if there is going to be a circus trial, we're going to be there as well, watching with popcorn in the front row. Next on the docket, more deposition transcripts have been released from the Ghislaine Maxwell civil matter. And what have we learned? Well, we've learned that the former house manager testified in newly unsealed depositions from 4 years ago that, get this, shocking, Maxwell took topless photos of the young girls. Does this shock anybody? Doesn't shock me. The question is now whether there's going to be more charges for this possession and taking of this child pornography, depending on these girls' ages. And then what was the purpose for that? Obviously, she shouldn't have done that. It's illegal to do so. But was that for blackmail purposes? Was that to have their own little security, so to speak? We'll definitely have to wait and see how this plays out. The bottom line is, this trial is going to be good. And that brings us to the Ghislaine Maxwell days in custody and nothing bad has happened to her. That's right, 144 days. And don't worry, the trial begins in July. So once again, lots of things can happen. Next on the docket, Harvey Weinstein. Remember that guy? Yeah, guess what? He's still in prison in New York. He too has COVID. But we have also now learned that he apparently is being videotaped every second of the day, and that he actually has a guard assigned to shadow him for the day and has a camera at him at eye level, basically recording him around the clock. Why are they doing this? Why is Mr. Weinstein getting special treatment? Well, apparently the security at Rikers, the officials are worried that if they take their eyes off of Weinstein, things could go quickly awry. More importantly, state officials are doing this to tamp down any conspiracy theories that might arise if things go south. Not just that they're looking to cover their butts from criminal liability. Now, why are they doing this? Well, more than likely, it's because of that guy named Jeff that died while he was in custody and the cameras just happened to be turned off for those couple of minutes when somebody was making their rounds and, you know, he wound up deceased, hanging himself in his cell. You know, little things like that. Sounds like a good plan on the part of the New York Department of Corrections so that they can protect themselves from any claims that anything went wrong if Mr. Weinstein has something bad happen to him. We'll continue to watch that as well. Because don't forget, Mr. Weinstein has some court dates coming up in the state of California. Next on the docket, let's talk Suzanne Morphew. The obituary for Suzanne Morphew's father, Gene Mormon, 87, he died November 11th after a nine-month battle with cancer. And his obituary says it all about whether he thinks his daughter was ever going to be found again. In the obituary, it states that he's survived by three children, David, Debbie Mormon of French Lick, Indiana, Melinda Baumunk of Sarenville, Tennessee, Andrew Jenna Mormon of Anderson, Indiana, Stephen Carey Hasty of Battle Creek, Michigan, nine grandchildren, one great-grandson, a number of cousins, and his special traveling cat, Brown. He was preceded to death by his parents, an infant brother, the mother of his children, Adrian Burnett Owen, wife of Luann, and missing and presumed deceased daughter, Suzanne Morphew. That's sad that a man goes to his death not knowing the whereabouts of his daughter, but he obviously believes that she is in fact presumed dead. Hopefully someone will have some information here shortly about what happened to Suzanne Morphew so that hopefully in the next life of Mr. Mormon, he'll have some peace as to his daughter's whereabouts. Sad story. Next on the docket, let's take a quick recess. Please go to crimetalksearch.com and sign up for a background subscription service today. And let me tell you why. I can see the numbers when people go and sign up for this. And you know when the big number is? The big spike? Monday morning, after the weekend. That's right. When people go out and they meet somebody, maybe they think, hey, this is the guy, this is the girl, this could be the one. Go check them out. You will not be disappointed if you do. So go to crimetalksearch.com. You'll get a background subscription service. Nominal fee. You can search as many people as you want. You can do it completely anonymously. And you're going to get background information regarding criminal history, bankruptcies, marital records, civil judgments. You're going to get information regarding their emails associated with them, phone numbers, social media, all the things that people have out there. And then you're going to be able to find out why does he have four phone numbers registered now? Is that because he's got Tinder accounts and he uses different phone numbers to communicate with people? Why does he have burner phones? Those are the kinds of questions you want to ask. You'll be happy you did. Go to crimetalksearch.com. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, a Missouri woman kept her husband's body in a freezer for nearly a year, then lost a lawsuit to have his corpse returned to her. Barbara Waters, 68, demanded that officials return the remains of her dead husband, Paul Barton, after she was arrested for keeping them in a fridge in the bedroom of her home. She did this for almost a year, but a federal judge dismissed her lawsuit earlier this month, claiming that Waters didn't respond to court orders. She responded, "I'm not done. They think they got away with something, but I'm not done." Waters had claimed that she kept the 71-year-old Barton's body in a freezer in her bedroom after he died of Lou Gehrig's disease because she feared that the doctors would cut him up for medical study purposes. In November of 2019, police discovered his body and determined that he may have been deceased since December of 2018. Waters was charged with abandonment of a corpse, though the case was dropped because the judge reasoned that she had only intended to preserve the remains and keep her late husband close to her. Meanwhile, Barton's body has been stuck in the limbo of this legal battle and has been in storage for the last year. The Jasper County coroner states that it's a long time for a body to be kept in the morgue, but added due to the circumstances, he's had no choice. Now, the decision needs to be made of whether there'll be a burial, cremation, or donation to medical science. Obviously, we know that Miss Waters doesn't want him turned over for medical purposes. So hopefully she'll be able to choose between cremation and a burial. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Please meet Kiara Clarice. She's 22, and she is a Florida mother who's alleged, that's right, we'll give her the presumption of innocence, allegedly forced her 2-year-old son to smoke from a vaping device containing THC so that the child could sleep and eat a little better. Investigators charged Miss Clarice on a felony child neglect charge after her former girlfriend alerted the victim's father about the vaping. The witness also reported that Clarice had canceled the boy's medical appointment out of concern the doctor would discover THC in his system. Upon being told that his son had been vaping, the boy's father contacted the Florida Child Welfare Agencies and then brought the boy to the hospital where a drug test, in fact, detected THC in the child's system. At that point, the hospital contacted the sheriff's office, which they're required to do by law. The child's father stated that the boy appeared to be slow and lethargic during a visit with the toddler earlier this month. Clarice's ex-girlfriend told the police that she observed Clarice put a vape pen in the child's mouth and allow him to smoke it in order so that he could sleep better. The ex-girlfriend also stated that Clarice would send her photos of the child after he used the wax pen. The ex-girlfriend also reported that Clarice, all she wanted to do was to party, drink, and work in a club. Apparently, she works at the Cocoa Beach Strip Club, where she's been employed for the last 7 months. Now, when Clarice was questioned by the police, she declined to answer questions, but then apparently made some spontaneous statements, which is what gets most people in trouble, where she stated spontaneously that she smokes pot at her residence, but did not smoke it in front of her son in the last 2 months. Police noted that a check of the child's medical records revealed that he had missed 2 recent checkup appointments with the pediatrician. Clarice was released after posting a $3,000 bond. Her next court date is set for December 15th. What is the teachable moment that comes from Clarice's mistake here, other than giving THC to a 2-year-old? That's the first one, absolutely. But the fact of the matter is, not everybody is cut out to be a parent, and if you can't handle the responsibility, hopefully you can give the child to somebody who can, in fact, be responsible. So, Miss Clarice, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day, and that's right. And if you are ultimately selected as the dumb criminal contestant of the week, that's right, you will receive a mug. That's right. Now, sometimes we also give away a mug. Sometimes if people send me a nice enough request, we'll send them a mug. But I have a better idea. Why don't, if you really want a mug, tell me what you love best about the true crime genre, and we'll pick a winner, and we'll send maybe the top five people mugs. So do that in the comments below, and if you win, we'll get in touch with you, and we'll send you a mug. Hey, thanks for watching. Thanks for being patient. Sorry I wasn't here last week, but we're getting better. We have no plans to get sick ever again. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.